Gentlemen, if you'll take and turn to the second tab in your notebook, tonight we're going to go over the structure of the church. How do we actually organize Briarwood? I would communicate to you several things just as we begin our way through this. One, there are some wrong ways to organize a church, obviously. There are some immoral and sinful ways. I don't know of any church doing that, okay? I know there are some, but I'm not going to say there aren't any, but there probably are some, but I don't know of any churches doing that. There's a lot of right ways. There's a lot of good ways. There's a lot of wise ways to organize a church. And if you'll just talk to everybody that you know that goes to other different churches, you're going to find out, other than the biblical structure that gets laid out when it talks about having elders and having deacons and then having staff, other than that, every church is going to organize differently. And the key is not to find what is the perfect organizational structure. The key is to embrace one that really does fit you as a church. Okay, so you want to embrace whatever organizational structure fits you as a church, and then make sure everybody's on the same page. Because there's nothing more frustrating than to have an organizational structure that your church doesn't understand, or that your staff or your officers don't understand how it actually functions, or why you put it together the way that you did. And our organizational structure has evolved throughout the years. And so I love looking at organizational structures of church. I actually enjoy this. I am the son of an engineer. And so that probably plays a little bit into it. I am probably the only person in the room that has a 3x5 card that's graph paper. But that my dad said, if you're not carrying graph paper, you're wasting time. Okay. So I always have graph paper to keep life ordered. Always have something with me to orchestrate that. And I love studying and understanding how organizational structures work. Because, like I said, everyone is unique. And the key is for it to fit your particular church. So if you look at this structure, there's a few things I want to make sure that we understand about the structure. Okay, the pastor reader, our senior pastor, reports directly to the session of Briarwood Presbyterian Church, and he is responsible for every single staff person at Briarwood. Every staff person is an extension of his ministry. Okay, so theoretically, if he could do everything, you wouldn't need anybody else. And if you were to ask me, if you were to go, and I sometimes get the opportunity to consult with different churches, and let's say that they're a church that's a church plant, and they have one staff guy. They have a pastor. And so their inevitable question is, how do we figure out what the next hire is? Because this church down the road hired this, and that church down the road hired that, and my cousin in South Dakota did that, and my church that I love down in Florida did this. So how do we figure out what the next hire is? Well, my counsel to them is you always begin with your pastor. And you say, what is the glaring weakness or the glaring gap of our pastor? What can he not do? What is he incapable, ungifted, unskilled, untrainable in doing? Figure out what that is in a very gentle way and write it on a card, and that's probably the next hire you need to do. Because if you go hire somebody that is 50% just like him, you only made 50% progress in your church. So go find whatever that next need is. What's the complement of that? Now, when you get to a place like Briarwood, it's kind of a ridiculous illustration. Obviously, nobody could do everything. And so what happens is we all serve as an extension of Pastor Reader, and that's about 400 people. All right, I think. I say about, you're probably like, I'll bet you know. Okay, it's 406. Okay, so that's about 400 people, individual staff people. That would be a combination of full-time staff and part-time staff spread throughout all of our ministries. You say, how do we get to 406? And that, you look around and go, we need 406? Okay, every ministry that you know of on paper at Briarwood, all board-directed ministries with the exception of one, all of our program ministries, all the staff, etc., every single one of those people are employees of Briarwood Presbyterian Church. You see, the only other entity that we have tucked into our system is the seminary. For accreditation purposes, it is a separate entity. None of the rest of those are separate entities. So if you were to call the IRS and ask the IRS about or let's say you worked for Campus Outreach, and you called the IRS and said, well, I'm a Campus Outreach employee. They would, there's no such thing. You're an employee of Briarwood Presbyterian Church. Check your W-2. Well, I work for the school. No such thing. There is no entity to school. You're an employee of Briarwood Presbyterian Church. So Pastor Reeder has the responsibility for all of those people. Please don't ask him to name every one of them. I'll say he'll do better than me, but don't ask him to name every one of them. And it isn't our job just to be responsible for them, but we want to make sure that we come up with a way that each one of them can grow and develop in what their gifting is. One of both the blessings and I think the responsibilities of large churches is to be able to hire specialists. In smaller churches, you have to hire generalists, right? Because you've got almost as much that has to take place, at least categorically. In other words, a little church can't say, we don't do funerals. Right? Well, we don't do weddings. Well, yeah, of course you do. You know, you do fewer, but of course you do. You're going to have to function as a church to do those things. But at a large church, you get the opportunity to hire a specialist in many, many, many different areas. And you'll see much of that reflected as we walk our way just through this. Now, clearly, on this page is our organizational chart. That's not 400 people. That's not even the 340 full-time people that we have. This represents part what we call, for the most part, this is basically just the first few layers of our organizational chart. Most of these people, not all, are a part of what we call our staff leadership team. So every month our staff leadership team meets, and most of the people on this, the exceptions would be some of the ones on Mr. Moore's team, the administrative service team, but most of these people make up on this particular sheet, make up the staff leadership team. There's another sheet, it's about this big. It doesn't have the 400, but it has closer to about 150 or 200 people that are on it that we track, that we pray for, that we try to make sure that we shepherd. But we're trying to develop all of these people in their responsibilities. So how do we structure that? Well, Pastor Reeder reports to the session of Briarwood. He has one direct report. I report to the senior pastor as the executive pastor. And then there are five men that I get the opportunity to serve. And those five men represent what I refer to as the five branches of ministry. No, nothing unique about that. It's just that we've divided up, try to look at how do you make this big thing, how do you get it down in bite-sized portions. So we've divided up into five branches of ministry. Okay, and you'll see those branches of ministry in these columns right here. Okay, and so there is a team called the Executive Pastor's Leadership Team. I don't really like that title, and so I don't use it very much. EPLT, we'll use that a little bit. And the only difference between the Executive Pastor's Leadership Team and the Senior Staff Team is whether or not Harry's in the room. If Harry walks in the room, we just became the Senior Staff Team. And sometimes he comes in and out and in and out, and so we flip. And so if he's not in the room, then it's the Executive Pastor's Leadership Team. And those are these five men, the shepherding team, obviously Benny Youngblood, ministry team, Benny Parks, administrative services team, Matt Moore, the board directed ministry team, Jim Alexander, and then the missions team, Brian Winterstein. So let me kind of explain how we put these different groups together, okay? So go to the far left, Benny Youngblood. He leads our shepherding team. Benny is a shepherd. When I first became the executive pastor, Chuck Morgan was in this particular role. Some of y'all know Chuck. Chuck's still here at church. He shepherds this class that meets here in the chapel. Outstanding shepherd in this class. And I knew that at whatever point that Chuck retired, he had been talking to me about doing that. I knew the best shepherd I knew was Benny Youngblood. He is a shepherd, and he loves to shepherd shepherds. And so that's one of the examples I would give of where we get the opportunity to hire specialists in their field. That's a blessing for us. It's a blessing for the church. It's a blessing. It's a blessing for him. So his team is made up of really, I would say, there are two components to his team. One is there are a handful of shepherding pastors, okay? And so you know that in our church, we've broken down all of our congregational communities. We've broken them down into different subsets. When you were looking at that survey, there are about five classes listed, and it would have said that's the Ray Tucker group, okay, or community, okay? Or that's the Dave Lewis group, and there's five classes for Dave Lewis or Dave Matthews, etc. So on his team, there's one group. You see at the top there, Dave Matthews and then Dave Lewis. Ray Tucker is a shepherding pastor, meaning by shepherding pastor, I mean he has multiple communities under him. He also serves as our membership and Christian education guy. And then drop down to the bottom, Michael Wicklund is a shepherding pastor. Okay, so about half of Benny's team is made up of these shepherding pastors. They're responsible for groups of congregational communities, and then most all of our staff, male staff, most all of our male staff that are on the staff leadership team serve in a particular community. So in your community, there is a community pastor. If you don't know who your community pastor is in your community, you're not in trouble. They are. So please tell me, okay? And if you don't want to tell me, because I'll actually get on to him, tell Benny. He'll get on to him. It'll go a lot better because he's so nice when he gets on to him. But if you don't know who your community pastor is, that's a problem, okay? Your assigned community pastor, you should know who that is. And that's their responsibility for you to know that. They should be shepherding you. That's about half of Benny's team. Then the other half of Benny's team would be these ministries that you see listed here. And that would be the counseling ministry with Dr. Cloud. The pastoral care ministry right now is open. Mark Cushman fell out of the Lord's will and retired. I didn't mean to say that out loud. Mercy ministry, Chris Thompson in that regard. And then we do have a focused ministry that's shepherding, and that's just been filled by Stephen King. Jason Ellerby went to take a church in Coleman, and Stephen King has been moved into that particular function. So he's got the young couple, the three young couples, classes. So basically, that's the Altadena house, guys, okay? So if you think about the pastoral care, counseling ministry, and the mercy ministry, all do excellent jobs leading those ministries. And then Benny Youngblood, we affectionately refer to him as Second Benny, not because he's a lesser Benny by any stretch of imagination. It's just that First Benny's been here like 700 years. And so he's First Benny, and Youngblood came second, so he is Second Benny, okay? Then shift over from Second Benny to First Benny. Now you have the ministry team. Under the ministry team, this would be Benny Park's job is very, very difficult to explain. I always like to be around him when people ask him what he does, because who else has a ministry team pastor? I work at a church. What do you do? I'm the ministry team pastor. Well, what does that mean? I mean, you know, they don't know. Well, when in reality, he leads the group of people that would be typically the church staff. So if you think about a small church and you start looking down here, well, he's got, it says children and youth. Jay is the family's pastor. What we did last year was we took our nursery, our children, our junior high, and our senior high. So four different components, and we put them under one umbrella of family's ministry. And we've got a nursery director, that is Allison Craig, a children's director, that's Jake Stallings. A Raiders director, that's Ben Stallings. They don't get along. They didn't used to. They do now. And then a senior high director we don't have yet. So we're searching for that senior high director. So there are four director positions. And Jay, who's just done a fabulous job here at the church through the youth ministry, Jay is taking responsibility for leading for the first time, our family's pastor, doing initiatives for not only the students and the children in that, but the parents as well. And that's one of the things we identified we need to do a better job of doing, is ministering to those family units together, especially throughout the raising of children years. Then you have the children and youth or the families pastor, then college ministry, Max Bunn. Singles ministry is open right now. I mentioned Stephen King moved over, so that search has just begun. And then our discipleship and evangelism, Eric Rebels leads us in that initiative. The women's ministry, Christy Herrick. And then the worship ministry, John Haynes, just does a wonderful job. Those men and women serve as the ministry team. Like I said, if you went to a smaller church, that would be the church staff. And Benny is very gifted in the development of staff and does a very good job with them and serving them, and has served in this capacity for over 20 years. So we're encouraged to have him in that role. The middle column that you see there, the administrative service team, that's Mr. Moore. And under Matt, you have the accounting, Rob Allen. He's new to our staff team. Fred Morris previously served in that capacity. So Rob, come on just at the beginning of the summer. Then the bookstore, Debbie Little leads the bookstore and directs that ministry. Communications, Landon McKee, he is new. He's new to the role. Dave Baileus was in that role and retired. He's new to the role, but he's not new to Briarwood. So he's been at Briarwood a little over a decade. But he's been serving in the graphic design area, and now he has stepped up and just doing a very, very good job, and we're excited about some of the changes that he's begun to implement. Then a facilities director, Stephen Goebel, then the food services, Sherry Smith, library is Lisa Tucker, and then our safety and security, Jason Springfield, who serves for safety and security for the whole umbrella. Okay, so he's over. You'll see he has other people who work with him and for him, but he is responsible for the whole umbrella, and that's multiple campuses, obviously. So we've got to create good safety and security plans. So that makes up the administrative services team, and they do an excellent job in many, many respects to take care of the facility and the service aspect of our church. The next column over is our board-directed ministries. Jim Alexander has been here 5 years serving in that capacity. And so you've got our eight board-directed ministries that are under that. So Jim supervises Ike Reeder with the seminary and Peggy Towns with the ballet. The superintendent position right now is being searched for. We have an assistant, an interim superintendent in Amy Aiken, Dr. Aiken. Serving in that capacity, Briarwood Fellows, Seth Richardson, Campus Outreach as Olin Stubbs, Christian Medical Ministry, Bobby Parks, who's communicated his pending retirement, so that's in a search to find a replacement for Bobby. Bobby's been here 20 years. Then Young Business Leaders, Rob Jennin, who just took over with Phil Reddick's retirement, and then the Quest Ministry, which is Recreation Outreach Ministry, Scott Hanna. So each of these ministries, each of these are board-directed. They have boards to be able to address the specific focuses of those ministries, the outreach aspect, the discipleship aspect in those different contexts of that. And so Jim leads them as a team. Then the missions ministry, Brian Winterstein is our missions pastor. And so under the missions ministry, we have multiple different layers of that. So you have your national missions, which is Rob Looper. Rob came on our staff this year. It took us a couple years to hire a revitalization pastor, national missions pastor. And then we've got our international ministry, and so that's Taylor Barnes. So Taylor, when you say international ministry, this would be different from our three international congregations. This is where we go to UAB and in our community and reach out specifically to international students, okay? And I think I saw a picture the other day. They had a couple hundred people at an international kind of a back-to-school kind of kickoff. So praise the Lord, just excellent ministry being done there. We try to take advantage of, I don't know how aware everyone in the room is, but there's a significant number of international people that come to Birmingham. And we have a wonderful opportunity to minister to them. They wouldn't fit in any particular context. And so putting them together as international students gives it a very good identity. Then we do have the three different international congregations. Joel Acevedo is our Hispanic pastor. Ko Hamamatsu is our Japanese pastor. And then our Korean pastor position is open, although we did, Pastor Reeder and I, along with Brian, had the opportunity this last week to interview an excellent candidate for that. That's a tough hire, tough to identify candidates in that, very challenging. It's just like the candidate pool is a thimble, so praise the Lord that he has raised up an excellent candidate for us. And then our urban pastor, I will say a little bit more about that than I would typically say. So we've tried to do something in urban ministry and with our urban pastor that we've tried to do, and we keep defaulting back to the very thing we say we don't want to do, so we're going to just completely redo the whole thing, Okay? And what I mean by that is this. It's not that we've ever done bad ministry. That's not the case at all. But the goal of this urban position has always been, or at least for 15, 20 years, it has been that this person should be responsible to get our people physically and spiritually engaged in local ministry outside of our church. Okay, so this person's responsibility would be to help our people who want to function and use their gifts, use their burdens, use their passions, get them engaged in ministry opportunities in Birmingham and surrounding area, different national ministries, but primarily focused in Birmingham, get engaged in those particular ministries. But what keeps happening is we keep defaulting to our urban pastor goes and does urban ministry and tells us the great testimonies, which they're fantastic, but our people don't get involved. Or they go find great opportunities and we fund them. We have funded all kinds of fabulous ministry across our city, but our people don't get involved in that. So we're never satisfied. We want our cake and eat it too with the cherry on top. And so we're going to actually change the title, change the name. I'm not sure. They did a whiteboard meeting about this just the other night. I'm not exactly sure what it's going to be, but something along the lines of mobilization so that the title actually says what the person's supposed to do and so that the church will know what that is. And so we'll know so that hopefully we can mobilize our church members out into those ministry opportunities in our community. And so, and then Brian serves primarily also as the global ministries team pastor. And so Dale mentioned he was on the missions committee. So Brian serves in that context over that. Okay? So that's our staff organizational chart, at least the first few layers. So any questions about any of those or any of that chart right there? No, yes. That's right. So the only people technically, Ike and the handful of people they have, that is a separate entity. Okay? Now, it's a little bit unique because they would like for us to do their payroll, and we do. So technically, everybody is paid through Broward. But that's only because we do their payroll. But they are a separate entity. Their funds would actually come, their W-2 would say Birmingham Theological Seminary. Everybody else's would say Broward Presbyterian Church. Yes. You could give this, Lance.
Special connection. Yeah. Is that just, you know,
like,
that's
it?
Or...
Oh, no. So special...
Yeah,
oh, it's outstanding.
That was
an incredible blessing. So Michael Johnson is our new Special Connections Director. And Michael just had an event where he brought in 42 different ministries related to special needs. Put them in the fellowship hall over here. Probably had 200 people wandering around through there. Just a phenomenal networking deal. I would say, Lance, that where he lands on this, he reports up to Dave Lewis, who reports up to Benny Youngblood. So you would find there's ministries you go, hey, hold on a second. What about such and such a ministry? That'd be the next page. All right, so you'd have to go out another layer or another layer to be able to get those ministries into this. Okay, good question. Any other questions? Yes. In our structure, yes. I wouldn't want to defend it functionally, okay? But in our structure, because the fundamental approach of that is to shepherd those families through that. It's as much a ministry to the family as it is to the individual, although we've gotten so much better. Michael's, I don't know if y'all have met Michael, bless his heart. His wife is due for their first child on Friday, so he's not doing, he's head's in the clouds a little bit. I look around the room, a lot of us have been there, so let's not take any pot shots at him, but we've been there too. But yeah, he's just a great guy and can really, he's been in the special educational world for 14 years, I think it is. So very beneficial to have his expertise in it. All right. Any other questions? Yes.
How would he differ, a shepherding pastor, how would he differ?
Dave Lewis and Dave Matthews are part-time, and Michael's full-time, so he has a bigger load than they have, and we don't give them very many other responsibilities, and we do to Michael. So that's a good question, though. All right? Any other questions? Once, twice, sold. Okay. If you have one later, don't hesitate to ask. Flip to the next page, and you'll need to turn it sideways. So, okay, how do we make decisions? Okay, what's the process by which we make decisions at Briarwood? I'm going to age myself, but if you're anywhere close to my age, you know, this is the old Saturday cartoon. You know, how does the bill become a law? Okay, you know, I'm just a bill sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, how does that happen? How do you get through the system to actually become the recommendation to be fulfilled? Okay, so here's our structure. All right, so you've got the session. All right, the session is responsible. Period. So don't look for the scenario where the session isn't responsible, because it doesn't exist. Okay, so the session is responsible. But the session has taken the counsel that Jethro gave Moses and said, you can't do everything. If you keep trying to do this the way you're doing it, and every single issue has to come to before you, then you're not going to make good decisions. And Jethro told Moses, you will wear yourself out and you'll wear the people out as well. So the session has said, okay, we need a structure where we can push decision-making down. Okay, so the intent of this, the expressed, declared intent, is to push decision making down into the system, so they have delegated that down in and remained as the authority of it at the top. Well, how did they go about doing that? Well, they established three commissions, and you'll see in the bottom left, a darkened box, shepherding team commission. Next to it, board directed ministry team commission. Next to it, the ministry team commission. And then over to the right of it, the diaconate as a whole. Okay? So these three commissions that were designated, the session delegated responsibility to them. There's a charter. They have limited responsibility to be able to function on behalf of the session. Okay? So the session has said, you can function in these particular capacities. Well, how are these made up? Well, if you go to the shepherding team commission and you look, you're going to have an elder chairman, an elder vice chairman, the shepherding team staff supervisor, that's Benny Youngblood, the shepherding pastors, we looked at that on the previous page, the shepherding elder representatives, okay? Remember that form that Dale was talking about just a minute ago, and he said, if you're in this community, then let us no, and there will be a representative from one of those communities. They serve on that. And so you'll see the ministry teams down here. So there would be an elder representing Youngblood, Cushman, Lewis, Matthews, International, Ellerby, and Tucker. Okay? Not Ellerby anymore, Stephen King. So that they would represent those different aspects of that. The ministry teams that are represented there, arbitration, mediation, Christian education and family, counseling, pastoral care, prayer, mercy, membership, and assimilation. All right, so there's going to be both a staff representative and an elder representative, and they're going to make up a commission, and they're going to deal with the shepherding issues of the church. All right, they're going to meet every other month, and they're going to take up anything that would bubble up to them or that they would initiate in the context of shepherding. Anything with our congregational communities, our Christian education, our counseling, our pastoral care, all of those aspects are going to come to that shepherding team commission. Okay, go to the next one. The board-directed ministry team commission. This one's pretty straightforward. You're going to have an elder a chairman and a vice chairman. You're going to have Jim Alexander, the staff supervisor. Then you're going to have each of the directors of the board-directed ministry, so eight directors, plus every board-directed ministry will have an elder representative that serves on that. Dale mentioned in filling out that form, you got to be on the board to represent them on the commission, okay? So they would have an elder that represents them on that. So eight directors, eight elders, plus an elder chairman, elder vice chairman, and then Jim Alexander, okay? So right around 19, 20 people that are going to serve on the board-directed ministry team commission. And decisions, recommendations, et cetera, that come from our board-directed ministry are going to first come to them. So they're going to come to that commission, and that commission, those people, those men serving that capacity can function within their charter. Okay, now go to the next box, the ministry team commission. This is the largest commission, and it basically has two aspects to it, okay? One half of the ministry team commission are the actual ministry teams, okay? Remember those men and women that report up to Benny Parks? Well, those are the ministries represented there. We added missions to it. So you've got missions, discipleship and evangelism, worship, children, youth, college, singles, women's, okay? All of those will have a staff person, and they would have an elder representative. So there is an elder that represents the worship ministry. There's an elder that represents the college ministry, an elder that represents the women's ministry, and they're in that room. Also, on the ministry team commission, you have all of the diaconate committees. Okay? Remember, every diaconate committee has two elder liaisons. So both of those elder liaisons for finance would be on that commission. Both of those elder liaisons for human resources would be on that commission. So you look down, those are your diaconate committees, and all of them serve. So from them would come business, recommendations. Here's the budget. Some from them would come recommendations from IT, from communications, etc., building and grounds. We need to re-roof the church. So all those recommendations would come from the committee to the commission. Okay? Now the session, when it set up this structure, didn't just want to push decision-making down to the commission. They wanted to push decision-making down to the committee. So in other words, what the session, when they designed this structure, what they said was, we don't think it's the best thing for 75 ruling elders and a dozen teaching elders, so let's call it 85 people, to sit in a room and try to do committee business when you could set up a budget committee of experts, when you could set up an HR committee of experts, when you could set up an IT committee. Can you imagine if we'd have gone to the session and say, hey, y'all, we were thinking about swapping over to Office 365 at the church, and what do y'all think? I mean, first of all, half our elders would go, why not 366? All right? Because they don't know what Office 365 is, all right? You can't do good, but you go into the IT committee and you pitch that to the IT committee, they actually know what that is and the ramifications and what it would take. And so they can go and study and look into it, and then they can make a recommendation. But they can't act independently. They're just a committee. So they decide, you know what? We think that it is the right thing to do to go to Office 365 across the board, and we think the right time is this, but that costs money. So guess what? We don't let the communications committee have a blank check. So they say, we want to do the transition, but it's going to cost X. All right. Well, then you got to take that decision and take it over to the finance committee and say, do we have X, and will we prioritize it for this particular responsibility? Well, the finance committee says, you know what? We've got X. It's available, but we do not sit in a position to determine if that's the right priority for the church. You follow me? We got the money, but we're not the ones that decide what the next $50,000 gets spent on. You'll need to go ask the budget committee that question. Okay? So you go to the budget committee. Okay, budget committee. The IT committee wants to go to Office 365. Let's say it costs $50,000 just to transition over to that. Finance says we have the money, but what we need to know is that in the budget? And the budget committee says, nope, it's not in the budget. Well, who do you ask? Well, who's in charge? The session. Okay, so how does that get there? Well, it comes out of the ministry team commission, and it becomes a recommendation up to the leadership team committee. All right? The leadership team committee, please, put an asterisk by this, circle this, make sure you understand the difference between a commission and a committee. In any organizational structure, there is always angst at the top. There's always angst about who actually gets to make the decisions. Okay? The wisdom in this structure is, if they would have made the leadership team a commission, I would have said that would have been a huge mistake. Because they could have then acted on behalf of the session and kept the session from ever being engaged in decisions, and that would have been a mistake. Instead, the leadership team is a committee. They cannot act on behalf of the session. Okay? So things come to them. So this Office 365 decision comes to them. The leadership team is a balanced committee. It has an elder chairman, an elder vice chairman, then the three commission chairmen, ministry team, board directed, and shepherding team chairmen serve on that. And then the diaconate chairman, diaconate vice chairman, and the diaconate mercy team chairman, then the senior pastor, the executive pastor, and the administrator, we all serve on the leadership team. It's like an air traffic control room, okay? The Office 365 decision comes up to that committee. What their job and responsibility is to do is to say, let's say in my example that the IT committee made the recommendation but didn't check with finance or budget. Then the leadership team would say, okay, great recommendation, sounds good, but you got to check with, you got to get the money. Y'all don't have the authority to do that. So the leadership team would send it to the finance committee and send it to the budget committee so that we would make sure that any decision that goes out of the leadership team has been what sometimes is referred to as a decision being fully baked. In other words, you don't want to run it up to the session only for it to have to go back down to the budget committee or go back down to the system. So you get that accomplished. We look at it. There's nobody else that needs to look at it. The leadership team can only send it to a place that it needs to go or send it to the session. That's it. They do not have the ability even to kill it. They can hate it. They can be against it. They can speak to it on the session floor, but they cannot kill it in committee. They do not have that authority. And I think that's important for people to realize. So in that example then, it goes up to the ministry team commission and then on to the session, comes as a recommendation to the session floor, and it would be represented that the IT committee has talked about it, made this recommendation. That's a group of experts in this world. Budget has spoken to it. Finance has spoken to it. We present it to you. Session deliberates over it and decides we do it. And then you implement it. And then it goes forward. So that same thing can happen in any of these commissions. A recommendation goes to, let's say that the Christian Medical Ministry wants to add this year three more people to the Christian Medical Ministry Board, okay? They can't do that independently. The session has to approve any board members, and so they would make that recommendation to the commission. The commission has a vetting process that they go through to make sure, from a theological, philosophical background, they go through a vetting process. Comes to the leadership team committee, everything's in order, goes to the session, votes on it, makes their decision, that now Christian Medical Ministry can implement that. Same thing happens on the Shepherding Team Commission. The typical business of Shepherding Team Commission that would come out of that would be the membership report every month that we get, because the session has to make that decision. Typical business out of Board Directed would be board members, because all eight of them are doing that every year, so that's the typical decision there. Then the ministry team commission is pretty diverse because you've got all the committees and all the ministries, and so there's all kinds of different business that can come up through those that can come up to the leadership team. If the diaconate as a whole were having a meeting and they said, well, we have an idea, and it came to the leadership team, it would simply be sent to whatever committee or ministry team that would be appropriate, and it would go through the exact same process. And it would work its way all the way up to the session. When the session gets their packet for their meeting, then when they're looking at their packet, it will list out all the decisions that are coming for the session meeting, and there will be what we call a critical path summary. And I doubt any of them do, but they could get this chart out, and they could follow the decision all the way up through the session, and we'll list out who serves on those committees, in the hopes that if an elder has a question about that, you know, I dabble in IT a little bit, and I did Office 365 at home, and it was a train wreck. Could have been user error, but it was a train wreck, and I don't think we ought to do that. Well, here's the name of the people on the IT committee making the recommendation, and we say, please call one of them, because that's going to be a tough conversation on the session floor with 85 people in the room, and you're down in the weeds on Office 365. But it is certainly the prerogative of the session to do that if they desire to be able to do that. So That's how decisions go all the way through the system, how they make it up to the session. The session can redirect. The session can ask for something. I mean, can direct something to be tabled, to be sent back to a particular committee. Maybe they think the committee didn't consider something. Absolutely, they can send it back, and it'll come right back through the system back to the session. In our session meetings, we have new business, but it says new business for referral. And the reason behind that is because the session has fundamentally said we do not want to turn 85 people into a committee. We don't want to do committee business with 85 people sitting in a room. We've established a structure where we think we've put the right people on committees to be able to actually speak to these things, and we want to hear from that group first. So send it to them, let it come back, and now we want their wisdom in what we should do. Okay? It's a so when people say, "Well, Bruce, how do decisions get made at Briarwood?" I go, "Very slowly." Okay? Very deliberately, but with the right people involved. So that's the whole goal. The whole goal is to get it in front of the right people and to hear what the right people have to say about that. And so with the right people involved, one of the blessings of my position is that I will get to see something or know about something almost from its inception. So I'll know that it bubbled up in a committee. I may even be in that committee when it did. And I'll be sitting on these different, I go to a lot of meetings, be sitting on these different meetings when it comes through. And one of the blessings I get that I understand that the average elder doesn't get, okay, is that I watch the decision get better. From the time it first got mentioned, I mean, it's a bit of a stretch, pretty good idea, but after it got beat to death in committee, and then it went to a commission and questions got asked, and then it came up to a leadership team and questions got asked, by the time it gets presented at the session meeting, I watched that presentation by the chairman or one of the elder liaisons giving it, and I'm going, that is phenomenally better than the first time that got said. Here's the drawback to that if you're a session member. You didn't get to watch the sausage be made. And so you didn't see that it has gone through 20, 40, 60, 80 people by the time it got to the session floor. And so it feels like someone just said, what do you think about doing Office 365? I say we do it. Okay. And it feels like this favorite term that will get used, it just got rubber stamped. It did not get rubber stamped. It got beat to a pulp in committee, which is where the session said we want it to get beat to a pulp. We want it to be deliberated over in that particular area. Okay. Now, that's hard to digest if you're not in it. You know, and some of y'all, I know I'm looking out, I know some of y'all serve in different capacities there, so you might have questions. So any questions about how do we actually go about making decisions through our process? Okay. Yeah. Let me explain my example. It was a little bit hypothetical, but we actually did just do this, so it's not completely hypothetical. So the budget said we didn't budget for it. It's not that they didn't agree. The budget committee went, you didn't mention it last year. Remember, we did our budget, you know, X number of months ago, so, you know, 11 months ago, and you didn't mention it then. So all they're saying is it's not in the budget. If it were in the budget, it might not even go to the committee. The chairman, this is the line right here. But if it's not in the budget, you go to them and they go, nope. Then the finance committee has to say, are the funds available? If it had been budgeted, the answer is the funds should be available. If it's not budgeted, are the funds available? Yes, but the finance committee can't determine the use of those funds. They can just declare that they're available. That's right. Now, it could. I mean, every once in a while, I can't remember the actual issue, but we don't have this happen very often. But, and Benny, you might remember what it is, but we had something that had to go through the ministry team commission and the board-directed ministry team commission the same week. Same decision had to go through both commissions the same week. And so we had to make a call. The safest thing to do would have been to let it go through the ministry team commission and then send it to the board director ministry commission later, but that would have been 2 months later. So we said, we're going to let it go through both of these at the same time. And I prayed and prayed and prayed and said, Lord, do not let them disagree, because I don't know what we do then. I mean, you know, so that's a tough one. So, and they agreed. And so, but it had, because of what it was, it came through both commissions, came to leadership team. If they had disagreed, I think we'd have put them all in the same room. And said, y'all work it out, you know, figure out what you want to do. You're probably dealing with 20 people in that regard. So, yes. So let me say this. One, you could never make a statement that would cause me not to like you. But secondly, I have to think about that. I'm trying to think if there's a committee. Is anybody, well, I'm not sure Matt's in all those committees. I'm just going to put a little bit of an asterisk. There could very, and I know this, Benny is not in, you know, all of those, like that whole ministry team aspect, the college, the singles, et cetera. Harry, nor Bruce, nor Matt would be in those. So something could get up to that level, and we've not been in that room. You know, so there that would, now the ministry team commission chairman would be. So there'd be that, but not when it originated. But I think you're on target. Most of the diaconate committees, one of us is a member of that. Harry's not a member of any of them. He's ex officio. I don't think he's ever been to a committee meeting. That's right. So the chairman would know it. He's aware of that, and it would sit on the leadership. Now, those aren't necessarily re-deliberations about the topic. You know, that's more, you know, when the roofing issue, that got talked about for a long time. When it went to the DAT, the diaconate administrative team, that they didn't rehash the whole thing. They just were aware of it and directed it to make sure it went through the pathway. Somebody have a question over here? Yeah. Matt Moore. Okay. Yep.
You alluded to this a little bit when you said the two committees, in the case of one-offs, the Higgins Conservative Board, you know, this is not a good example, but the president issued an executive order. You know, what are procedures or things like that expedient?
Well, you'd default to your system, and your backstop is always the session. So if you can't agree coming up and you can't figure out where the agreement is, then it just goes to the session. What we would acknowledge is you got to be careful how to do that. Oftentimes people always want to say, well, let's get the session to talk about, or you'll be on a committee and somebody will say, well, what would the session think about that? Okay. That's 85 people. Okay, what they would think about it is 12 different things. I mean, you know what I mean? So the session isn't designed to sit and talk. Like, hey, what do y'all think about, you know, what color should the carpet be? You gotta put that somewhere and bring them a recommendation to talk about it. But you always have the session. But even down in some systems, like if it were two diaconate committees, you might could just refer it to the DAT that Brian referenced and let them reconcile it. So you just keep going up your structure until you can get it reconciled, always knowing that it's not go or no go, because the session's going to get to decide what we actually do, if that makes sense. So you always have that safeguard built in. All right, any other questions? Good questions. All right, y'all are great. Next page is easy, okay? This is actually just a picture of what we just said. All right, so this is not, there's not new information here per se. All this is saying, there's a little bit here that just to point out, all this is saying is any source of the recommendation, okay, You got to determine, okay, I've got an idea. Briarwood should do blank. So what actually happens? That recommendation could originate from a committee, a ministry team, a shepherding team, a board, a staff team. Now look at that next word. A member. Okay, so a recommendation could initiate from any of us. A non-member couldn't. They'd have to get a member to do it. But a member could say, I think we ought to do blank. All right? And then you begin with that, and you now begin to carve out a path. And this is a little bit of where the executive pastor gets to be the air traffic controller. And I'll get out my whiteboard, and somebody will come in the office, and we want to do X, okay? Will it take money? Yes. Finance. Is it budgeted already? Budget. All right. What's it about? What arena is it in? Shepherding. Okay, shepherding. Okay, tell me what about your idea. So now all we've done is to say, we know we got to touch these boxes, and we lay out a path and start the process. Start that idea going through the different process. Like I said, anybody at Briarwood can originate a recommendation. Anybody at all. And then we lay out a path and begin to work the decision through that path. And I pray for them to have patience through that process. It's great, and we prefer if we can get it. If it fits to a diaconate committee, we want to get it there to that diaconate committee. If not, then we might have to go to a ministry team, right up to a commission, then on to the leadership team, and then to the session. And that is the final approval of all actions. Okay, this happens every once in a while. I'll be in a committee meeting and somebody will have a recommendation and they're really wanting to be respectful and they say something like, now we want the session to know that we'll abide by what they say. And I always think, that's like me telling my dad, now, Dad, I want you to know that I'm going to abide by whatever you tell me. And he goes, I knew that before you opened your mouth. That was already been predetermined. So the session is the final authority. That we trust the Lord's sovereignty and how he puts the session together, how he speaks through the session of our church. And so the ultimate goal for us is get as much information as possible about whatever we're talking about, put it all together, get it before the session, and trust the Lord with the response. And then you implement it as the will of the Lord. So that's basically what this decision tree is tracking. All right? Any questions about that? Yes. Yeah, good question. So let's say it'd be more than this, but let's say this would be our session, and we'll say that a decision is coming up through one of the commissions, and I'm gonna represent the ministry team commission. I'm giving the report, and I'm gonna say that Tim Towns and his committee brought a recommendation for us. Gentlemen, the recommendation is before you. It got sent to you last Thursday with an explanation of it and the critical path summary. And I would turn to Pastor Reeder and I would say, Mr. Moderator, this recommendation comes from a commission. It needs no second in other words, you're not putting it as new business. It needs no second, and it's before you. He would step up and say, gentlemen, are there any questions? When I'm moderating, I count to 3 Mississippi. He counts to 13 Mississippi, but he's much more respectful than I am. And so any questions, let's say there are questions. Hopefully the elder liaisons are there because they've been in it. They can speak to it. Okay, anything else? If it has anything of a controversial feel or if there was any kind of tension in the conversation or anything like that, we would typically pray. And then it's all in favor, all opposed. Either the motion passes or it doesn't, and you move on to the next deal. Now, what could happen is that something's been worked on in committee. It's taken 2, 3, 4 months to make it up to the session. It gets put before the session, and someone says, I would like to offer a friendly amendment. That's their prerogative. That's the session. So you have an amendment. The determiner of the motion would have to figure out whether or not it is friendly, or I'd like to offer a substitute motion. We want to do something different than what that motion said. That's the prerogative of the session. Typically, if our session is about to undo the committee work, they'll send it back to them. So instead of, unless there's some time issue, and this isn't a rule, so it's typically, the session will say, let's send that back for this reason and let it come back to us again instead of just The session does not want to create the practice of undoing good committee work without, because they're not in the room, you know, without them doing that. So, but it's just a voice vote. Yes, Mike. Yeah, you're not suggesting any of our members would come up with any crazy ideas, are you, Mike? Yeah, this never happens. The guy that wanted, we need to put a baptistry in. All right, you're going to need to meet with Pastor Reeder first. So, good question, though. Let's say we'd figure out where it goes, okay? And that committee is sitting there scratching their head going, we're not building a pool in the horseshoe out here in front of the church. And so they would communicate to them, now you could continue through this, but our whole committee would speak against it to the session. So it's not that they have the authority to say no. They do have the authority to say, we'll recommend we don't do that. So now you have an individual member or a group that's wanting to do X, and the very committee that has responsibility in that particular ministry or whatever says, well, we can't tell you no, we won't do that. Only the session can do that. So what we'll say to you is, we don't think it's a good idea, and here's why. And we'd like for you to withdraw that. Well, we're not going to withdraw it. Okay. Well, you need to know, then we would speak against it through the process. So our recommendation would be that we don't do it. Almost without exception, that ends it. So nobody's going to want to, you know, work it through. But there have been some that, you know, they keep going. The next group tells them the same thing, and the next group tells them the same thing. So that process kind of plays it out in that regard. And then somebody's going to say, why are we talking about this? Why don't you just tell them no? Because that's not very Presbyterian. Okay, so we need to honor our structure to work with those. It's a good question. All right, yes. Yeah, it's a good question. It's different for Pastor Reeder and myself. So if Pastor Reeder were going to speak to something, in 21 years, I know what he agrees and disagrees with, because he and I would have talked about it, but no one else will know it. And if it's just, I wouldn't do that, no one will ever know it. He is not going to throw his senior pastor weight around because he'd go left and they want to go right. They want to do it on Tuesday, he'd do it on Thursday. They want to do 10 of them, he'd do 4 of them. This is not going to happen. Now, let's say that it's an issue of conscience, okay? So it's either theological or an exegesis of a passage, some issue of conscience. He won't speak to it as the moderator, okay? That would be abuse of the position of moderator, okay? So he'll hand off the moderatorship in order to speak to it. So he'll ask Benny Parks or somebody to come moderate the meeting so that he can then speak to whatever that issue is. So he would do that. My parameter would be, I feel like it's my responsibility to give the session, it's my job, I think, to give the session factual information. It is not my job to tell the session what I think. That is not... I don't think that's in my purview. I've had the opportunity, by the time something got there, I've had the opportunity to answer questions from people multiple times over probably a 2-month period of time. So in my mind, once it gets there, unless I'm asked a specific direct question from the session, then my role is not to tell the session what I think about it. I trust that that's already had the opportunity to do that. But if they ask me a factual question, I think it is my job to answer that, but not to speak for or against something like that. Does that answer that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Any other questions? How the session what? Say it again. Great. That's a fair question. So in the in this room are, let's say everybody was here, okay? In this room are 25 men that have been nominated by the congregation to serve as a candidate to be elected to serve as an elder for the class of 25, okay? So they're going through training, then, and that's the cap. Elders are capped, three classes of 25, that's the 75. So it goes, they go through training, and then we'll have the election 2 weeks, 2 Sundays in December, and let's say they all get elected, okay? Then you have the 75, three classes of 25 at one time, serving of ruling elders, and then the teaching elders that are a part of the session also participate and have a vote on the session. That's why the 75 gets up to 85. Now, there'd be other people in the room. Like, I don't think I've ever missed a session. I don't remember missing a session meeting. But I don't have a vote. And by the way, Pastor Reeder, myself, and Matt do not have a vote on leadership team. So we don't vote on leadership. I don't vote. I vote for the President of the United States. That's it. Okay. And I don't do that at Briarwood. So I don't. And Harry, we. No. 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 And I'm on the budget committee, the finance committee, and the HR committee, and I don't have a vote there. So, I don't. Yeah. So, here, Matt is on committees, does not have a vote. So, no. Oh, what the? That's the worst thing. No. At that moment, I would just walk out of the room. You know, like, with Bruce, we have a tie. You cast a vote. No. You pray and do what Presbyterians do. You table the issue at that point. So no, we don't have a vote. I can't. The only time I ever vote is as a member of the church. So I don't. I vote when members vote. I don't have a vote in any other capacity. Three. Oh, I'm sorry. Who picked? Thank you. Who picked the number 75?
No, I was wondering
how I got that. Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I'll say this because there's 126 deacons, three classes of 42. There's a 75 elders, three classes of 25. Those numbers of the capacity are determined by the congregation. So now, that was pretty simple because the congregation didn't deliberate. I mean, 75, how about 77? I mean, so it just fit for how can you shepherd the church? How can you manage the diaconate? Those numbers, I mean, there's good thought behind them, but there's nothing biblical about those numbers. Those could change, but the congregation would have to change those numbers. Okay, and Benny, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not anything that actually declares or demands that it has to be three classes of 25. The congregation didn't vote that. They voted the 75. So they determined the number of elders. So you could have 50 in one class and, you know, 15 and 10. So you wouldn't want to do that because then you have a problem. But that's where those numbers come from. All right. Anything else? Well, guys, one of the things that I get asked oftentimes, and it really does. I cringe when people ask me this because, not for them, because I think we don't do a good job communicating or making ourselves available. But if you have, people always say, well, like, what if I have a question? Or what if I wanted to communicate? What if I had a question about the survey? What would I do? Call. Email. Talk. I mean, you know, I want to make sure, guys, this is what we do, okay? We're available to help, to navigate through whatever it is, whether it be how to fill out your form, whether it be what does the session do, what does the diaconate do, what is, I don't understand the committee structure, just call us. We'd love to walk you through it and to help you understand it better. All right? Benny, can I close this in prayer? At 7:52, you'd be in bed by the time Harry Reeder got done, all right? Let me pray. Father, I thank you for these men. I thank you for this opportunity to meet tonight. Lord, thank you for the wisdom that you have given to the men that have come before us and the way that they have laid out this organizational structure. Thank you for those that serve in it and make it what it is, Lord. No structure is perfect in and of itself. And so I thank you for the faithfulness of the men that serve in so many different capacities, Lord, using their gifts, using their strengths, and using the areas you've gifted them in. You've given them those platforms and those experiences, those educations, the equipping, Lord. Thank you that it can be used in the context of the church for the common good of the church and for the platform of proclaiming the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Lord, I lift these men and their training before you. I lift their families before you. Pray that you would go before us even as we go home this evening. Pray that in Jesus' name. Amen.